So we're going to spend a little bit of time here. We just kind of talked about the defense a little bit, but I wanted to get your guys's take, kind of on kind of a big picture overview of how the D has looked, how the offense has looked, how the D has looked. We can talk about special teams a little bit. And then we're going to wrap things up by looking ahead to the final six games, and we're going to rank them hardest to easiest, and we're going to make predictions. And then we're going to get out of here. So, Matt, you shared something with the Common Fan Board of Directors earlier. This is really interesting. This is from Arbitrary Analytics, which
Very good
is
Twitter follow, by the way.
good Twitter follow. The list of teams with at least 1,200 yards rushing and holding opponents below 500 total yards rushing. There's two teams on that list. The
Yeah.
Air Force Falcons, and who do you think the other one is?
The Nebraska Cornhuskers.
Nebraska Cornhuskers. So this, my first thought on this, and this probably isn't fair to the Huskers, but you know, in the show The Office, when like Michael Scott, like something that should have been embarrassing would happen to him, and like he didn't realize it, and he was proud of it.
Yeah.
Like, so I was sort of wondering if this is one of those things. I'm not sure if we should be proud of this, and God bless the students at the Air Force Academy. Thank you for your service. You know, I'd rather be lumped in a statistical category with, you know, Georgia and Ohio State and Michigan
Alabama and
and
Michigan.
Alabama. I guess I think a positive way to a positive spin on this is what are two things the Husker fans have complained about for the longest time? The fact that we can't slash don't run the ball, or we don't even commit to running the ball, and you know, defense and stopping the run. And that's clearly schemes might change, systems might change, coordinators might change, but I think those two things, really being a defensive football team overall, is clearly really important to Matt Rhule. He said that much after it was either after the Michigan game or the Illinois game, but especially stopping the run. And then he wants to run the ball. He said, you know, he's also said he wants to run for 250 plus yards a game. So, I mean, I think that's that, if anything, that stat is indicative of, okay, that his priorities are at least taking hold. There's a lot of sloppy things we need to clean up, but that's complimentary football, and that can win you some games.
Yeah, I mean, if that's the main takeaway for me from that stat was that's a brand of football, right? Like, you know that Air Force and really all the military academies, they're going to try to run it down your dang throat, and they're going to tackle well, and that's what we want, right? You look at the numbers, we're averaging 200 rush yards a game, and that's a pretty bad. I think I don't know how many yards we had against Michigan. I don't know if we cracked 100. We might have with the Josh Fleeks garbage time 70 some yarder, but we're running for 200 yards a game. We're running for 5 yards per attempt. Like, those are, if you didn't watch those games, you'd be like, well, Nebraska runs the football fairly well. Like, that'd be my takeaway if I wasn't the hardcore fan that I am.
Right.
Now, could we run the ball better? To better set up the pass, yes, we could, but that would involve being a little bit better at throwing the ball, which we can't do. What I would personally love to see is, you know, we started to integrate that option, right? Started to integrate that option, and God love him, Heinie's trying to pitch the ball. He's trying to get that pitch out to Grant. A couple times it looked okay. I would love them to bring back that little option pass that we used to run. I mean, Frazier ran it well, Crouch went, even Jamal Lord could do that thing where it looks exactly like the option, and then the quarterback just pops back. There's like almost like a backwards crow hop, and then
And
pops it over the
who's
top
streaking down the field?
to
Thomas
Tommy
Fedone.
Fedone.
Yep.
And it'd be because it would always be like Tracy Wistrom or Matt Herrion, and that tight end would be running wide open. If we could incorporate, and I'm not saying it has to be that, but if we could do like run, boom, hit over the top with somebody. I know we're depleted at receiver, but do that, do something to the tight end. I mean, I think Fedone is my favorite player on the Husker offense, for the
Love
record,
Fedone.
for sure.
Clearly.
The
Yeah.
guy, and he just, because he, to me, he plays and seems like he's like a killer. Like he's got like mama mentality. Like he just wants to rip the other team's heart out. And I don't know how many guys like that we've had for a number of years now. So I love how they're getting him more involved, and I hope he gets even more involved.
Well, and I hope they're taking the bye week to like let's narrow down the menu here.
Yeah.
Let's look at who's still healthy.
Simplify.
Let's look at what we do well. I mean, they literally have been learning this option stuff on the fly from Ron Brown. They've said as much. And so like the offense has not been pretty. You know, you point to this, you know, like total offense is ranked 102. Okay. Rushing O is in the top 25, at least. Passing offense is down in, you know, Iowa territory at 125.
Oof.
Most of the offensive categories are not good. I think it's you have to acknowledge, you got to be a little bit fair, you know. Satterfield's taken a lot of flack, and I think some of that is deserved. I think it was Glenn Mason when he was coaching at Kansas. He had a son. Was one of those guys at Kansas. He had a son in high school, and the local media asked him, "What do you do during your son's games?" And he said, "I do what everybody else does. I buy a hot dog, a Coke and a hot dog, and I sit in the stands and I complain about the play calling." So like every like play caller at every level of football is probably the most criticized, you know, person in the whole coaching outfit, right? Yeah. But I think to be fair to Satterfield, coming into this season, we thought we were going to have Xavier Betts. Potentially, you know, we know he has game changing speed, decided not to play football anymore. Isaiah Garcia Castaneda got hurt.
Yeah, first game.
Yeah. Three or four games in one of those two home games. I think it was the first one, right?
I think in the first game.
Both Gabe Irvin and Ramir Johnson. No, sorry. I meant it was, yeah. And then, you know, two of your top three running backs out for this season. Jeff Sims has been hurt. I know there's varying opinions on that, and I sort of wonder how hurt he really is, or if the coaches are just sort of using that to kind of protect him and give themselves an opportunity to bring him back. But either way, like the guy you thought was going to be your guy has not been your guy. And then we got the news today about the Marcus Washington stuff. And so like, he deserves some grace, right? I think where fans get frustrated, and I would include myself, I would include this common fan in this category, is you look at the leap that the defense took in one off season. I know there's some seasoned guys on that side of the ball, you know, Reimer and Henrik and Newsom, and you know, so there's some players that have logged a lot of snaps at the college level on the defensive side of the ball, but that's kind of true of at least the O-line and some of these other players on offense. And we're still seeing penalties and turnovers, and you know, Rule said after the Illinois game, he was kind of harping on, he felt like the Illinois players were chirping too much and causing some players to move. He said, well, you know, we're not an undisciplined team. Well, it doesn't look like a disciplined team.
Right.
I don't know.
And don't you think some of the frustration, I think, is like everybody, we're smart enough as Husker fans to know when we see a disciplined, good offensive line. Yes. And it's typically the offensive line or a tight end. I feel like Borkature has had like, I don't know how many false starts this year. And it's always like, okay, one of the five linemen jumped. Okay. So it's like, I don't know. For me, that's one position group on our offense. There's a lot of starts there on that offensive line, guys. Like if anyone should be the leaders on that offense, there's two or three offensive linemen there that have two seasons worth of starts. Like let's clean that up a little bit.
At the very least, you got to cut back on the penalties, right? Sorry, Jeff, go ahead.
No, go ahead, TJ.
I was just going to say, I mean, if you still got guys, you know, winning one-on-one battles against you, okay, we can work on that. But like at least clean up the penalties.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. I was talking to some folks during the Illinois game. I think the concern with the offense is, can they hang on to the ball long enough to give the defense breaks? And can they score enough to not spoil this really good defense this year, right? Because it felt like we kind of scored. Did we score back to back touchdowns against Illinois? Wasn't the stat? It was,
that was like, we scored like two touchdowns in 10 seconds.
Yeah,
like 10 seconds. So, like, before that, it was like three, it felt like it was 3-0 for a really long time. And maybe that was just partly in my head. But I said to a few people, like, this is where this offense struggling so bad is really a concern, because the defense could play great, but they give up, they have one breakdown, one big play, and it's 7-3 and you're losing all of a sudden, right? Yeah. Or a special teams mistake and it's 7-3 or 10-3 or 14-3 or whatever. And so the offense, again, I just love to see them take the time this bye week to figure out who's left standing, what do they have to work with, really drill down on that. And again, I like what Rule says when he says we're a defensive football team, then you gotta compliment it on offense. And there's times when I wonder if things get lost in translation or if Rule just lets Satterfield completely call the plays, because there's times when it's like, we just need to hold the ball. And this goes back to even when Sims was playing, like Sims or Harbert, three plays in a row, just straight drop back.
Yeah,
like not even rolling them out, not even play action, just straight drop back. It's like,
no,
you don't really have the pieces to be doing it like this.
No, no. But there was that one moment the camera for the Illinois game caught it, where we were on offense and we called timeout, and you could see Rule looking right at Satterfield going, it was either no, 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 or whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, right.
Like, yes. He clearly did not like what they were about to do on offense. Whatever play Satterfield was going with, Rule vetoed it. And you're right. I think we do need to give Satterfield a little bit of grace. He's playing the hand he's dealt the best that he can. But having said that, if this offense still can't get off the ground next year, then it's time to start talking about, okay, is Satterfield the guy that's, because we're paying him a lot of money too.
Right.
Right. But you know, the other thing for me is that's big with the bye week. We're going to have some of these young receivers come out and play. Cause I don't know if we can roll out just Billy Kemp, Alex Bullock, and Ty Han and have a good enough threat there. So it's like Malachi Coleman and some of these other guys are going to have to start getting some more snaps. And it's kind of one of those nervous and exciting things at the same time, because, you know, when we get in that position, I'm like, well, we've got these guys are on scholarship. Let's see what they got. Like, one of these guys could be an absolute baller, but, you know, he's not very experienced. But that's to me where you figure out something in the offense where let's try to get this kid the ball and see what he can do. You know, whether it's throwing over top to Coleman, or you throw, we've got a couple of the littler, speedier guys, throw them a little flanker screen. We haven't run hardly any screen passes, whether it's to the running back, which I know we're depleted running back, or the receivers, I know we're depleted there, but I feel like that would be a neat little wrinkle to throw in there too. Do a little third and long. Okay. Instead of running a quarterback draw, do we have a screen play in the playbook that we could try to run a little? Remember, I remember when,
we haven't run a successful screenplay since the Clinton administration.
Hey, Bill, say what you will about slick Willie Callahan. We had that slick little middle screen to Corey Ross back in the day. That was just beautiful. Just beautiful. So if we can throw a little wrinkle in there, Satty.
Just a package of plays even for some of these guys who are athletic. I get it, you know, in another, trying to be fair to the offense, it's a little bit harder to learn, you know, an entire offense than it is to say, to throw a defender out there and say, go make a play. Right. And so you can probably have a little more freedom to do that on defense. But come up with a package of plays for some of these guys. I mean, I think that's, you know, if we want to be dancing in the streets on December 15th, with the GoodyearBlimp.com bowl, the biggest threat to that happening is our depth, which isn't very deep.
Yeah. No. Well, the question I always throw out there too is that, so with, you brought this up too, TJ, saying with Sims and Harburg, let's be honest, besides the Michigan game so far, Harburg is, we're winning. We're trending in a direction that we want to go. And I've heard rumblings of now people want to bring Sims back again. And is that something that you guys would agree with? Is that something we think is a bad idea? I don't understand. Why can the Husker Nation never be good with what's happening at that given moment? Why does there always have to be change or something different every week to week? We're winning right now. I mean, I don't have anything against Sims, but things seem to be going okay right now. Why do we want to mess with that?
Yeah, I don't think you can. I don't understand that either, Jeff. That's a great point, because I keep seeing this. Like, well, they're going to have to bring back Sims if they want. Well, why would you? Harburg's 3-1 in his last four starts. I guess why mess? I mean, for me, yeah, it wasn't a huge sample size, but I saw Jeff Sims the first two games, which we lost, by the way. We talked about it in our intro pod. He couldn't catch a snap, you know. Yeah. And then and the fact that we should have beat Minnesota, you don't want to blame one guy, but pretty dang costly interceptions, right? You go with the guy that maybe isn't quite as athletic, but damn it, he runs the ball hard.
And you said it too, Owens. You said it doesn't matter how we win, we won. You know,
just win.
A W is a W.
And if just it's win,
working,
baby.
It's working.
Yeah.
Just win, so, baby.
So setting aside what we should do, what do you guys think will happen? Because I feel like, I'm not suggesting that the coaches have been lying to us, but I do think the ankle is a convenient way for them to make it seem like they're not really choosing. Well, Sims is still recovering and Heinrich's been playing well. So they just kind of do this week to week thing without having to, and maybe they're protecting Sims a little. I respect that if they're protecting their player a little bit. But it also kind of feels like, are they keeping that option open for themselves too? So they get, well, he's fully healthy now. So it's the job is his again. My guess is, again, coming back to the depth thing and how often we're running Harburg, we're probably going to need both of them to get
there. Yeah.
Regardless.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you're spot on. Cause I even said that, after Colorado, after Sims rolled his ankle, I said to several buddies, I'm like, you know, don't you think even if the ankle's somewhat okay, you say you're going with Harburg because Sims is too dinged up. And I think I personally think you're onto something there. I think that's what's going on. I don't think you want to flat out say, no, you know, we're going with Heine. I think you just kind of leave Sims where he's at. And if there's signs of struggle from Heine, then you go, yeah, okay, Jeff, get in there. Let's see what you got.
I think the way you're going to know for sure who's going to go is if you go to Amigos, they have this Jeff Sims combo special, and it's so good, and it's really affordable. And so if you know, I'm going to keep checking this week, but I'm going to go at least two or three times. And if it says Heinrich Harburg special, $8.99 for a crisp meat and a soft taco, Mexi fries and a drink, you bet your ass he's starting that coming game. You can guarantee that.
First of all, just spot on. This is why you come to the Common Fan Podcast, for this kind of spot on analysis. That's absolutely brilliant, Geoff. But second of all,
go get yourself a Jeff Sims combo meal at Amigos.
I was just going to say, I didn't realize. So it's a crisp meat and a soft taco and a Mexi drink and Mexi fries and a drink.
$8.99.
In this inflation fueled environment, you can get all that for a $10 for less than a $10 bill. Count me in.
That's a hell of a deal. And Amigos, if you're listening or you know somebody at Amigos, we will accept sponsorships for this podcast.
I'll just accept one free Jeff Sims special.
There you go.
Just don't charge us for the ranch or the cheese.
We've got to keep moving. We talked about the D. I just want to put a bow on this conversation of the offense and the defense. I think the last thing with the defense is how well they play as a team. I'm not an expert on film or technique or X's and O's. I don't know how many Sunday guys they have. I know Frost always said Reimer would be a Sunday guy. Maybe Quentin Newsom, maybe Henrich, and then maybe some of these young guys. I mean, I think some of these young guys that Rule brought in are really talented, but they're freshmen. I mean, there's a number of freshmen playing. And so I think what's been encouraging is just how they play as a team. Again, I think I said it earlier, it's a really good defense, It remains to be seen, I think, if it's a great defense, because we have seen some elite defenses in Lincoln. But it's just, it's really exciting to have a defense that plays so well together, that tackles well, that flies to the ball, that's rotating in a ton of guys, which gives you hope for the future. And it's just being a defensive program again. I mean, we're known for the black shirts. How many years have you heard an announcer say, and here come the black shirts, and your heart almost sinks, because it's like, well, it's not really the black shirts we know. It's not really the black shirts. These guys are going to give up about, 450 yards of offense today. So it feels like we're refocusing on defense as a program. I think that's one of the things that's most exciting to me about this whole operation.
Yeah.
Matt Rule gets that too. I mean, like he said, so like, I remember on game day when news broke that he was going to get hired, he mentioned growing up watching the Huskers. That's just what he remembers about vintage college football back in the day. And one of the things that he said was that he wanted to get back to Nebraska playing that, smash mouth football, being a defensive team, and going back to the roots of when you used to watch the Nebraskas, the Oklahomas, where these teams would just beat the living hell out of each other for four quarters. And I'm just happy that we've got a guy that probably most likely understands that and kind of wants to push it back in that direction, which I grew up with it. So I love it. I'm on board.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And how sweet is it too? You mentioned that these guys, we've got these guys stepping up like Phelan Sanford from Benkelman, Nebraska. I mean, there's a little, and over the years, if you look back, there's always like some guy from small town Nebraska that makes some sort of like little Husker magic play. And I love to make in that great hit against Illinois and the ball just pops out. Like some hard-nosed white dude from Benkelman, Nebraska is playing Big Ten Power 5 football and making plays. That to me, that screams Nebraska football and blackshirt football just about more than anything.
And Gifford hasn't been the only one.
Gifford from Lincoln, Nebraska. Look at these two white dudes from Nebraska are balling out and helping us win games. I just love that. Yeah. I just love it.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool to see. And I mean, I know we're talking defense, but I mean, for God's sake, our quarterback right now is just from Kearney. Like, I love the fact that we just have players from
Indiana. Or as Gus Johnson, Gus Johnson always says, Kearney.
Kearney.
Well, and then
Chuba Kearney.
Chuba.
And Ty Han, I can't remember where he's from. I'm trying to look this up really quick.
Aurora, he had a catch
from Johnson, Nebraska. He played
Johnson Brock,
class D2.
Yeah, played for Johnson Brock.
Man, yeah. I remember. I mean, he was a great athlete. I remember when Frost brought him in as kind of like a preferred walk-on deal or something like that. But he had a catch against Illinois. Alex Bullock
and the Bullock boys from Prep, from Crane Prep.
Right.
I love it.
So that's been cool to see. Anyway, okay. Moving on. I don't want to spend too much time on this. One thing we haven't talked about is the special teams. Tristan Alvano, another Nebraska boy. I think he's going to be the future at the place kicker position. We're not here to bag on an 18, 19-year-old kid. He's 1 of 4 on field goals right now. That is concerning. I think it probably would have helped him to have walked into a more stable situation so he could have a year to get acclimated to college football and maybe get into a few games, but not have everything be on his shoulders. And so I just think I only bring this up, the coverage teams, the return teams, largely been sound. We've had a few nice returns, mostly covered well. I mean, I think the biggest thing with special teams right now, outside of the kicking game, the place kicking game, the biggest thing is like, I don't feel like I have to hold my breath on every punt. Like,
right.
I don't feel like I have to hold my breath when we're receiving a punt and like worry what disaster debacle is going to happen now. And it will, one of the many things that will always be just sort of shocking to me about the Frost era is that he just refused to pay more attention to special teams and it continued to hurt him.
Right.
Anyway, we don't have to go down that rabbit hole. I don't know. I know Timmy Bleakrode is still on the roster. Mm-hmm. He kicked for us last year. I think when we're everything we've been talking about is a team where the defense will keep us in the games. The offense has to do just enough. So what does that suggest? A lot of close games.
Right.
What's going to make the difference? And you your Iowa example, Matt, was perfect. Making field goals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, if you can, you can score a touchdown or two and then add 1 to 3 field goals, you know, that's, you know, those field goals could be the difference between a win and a loss. And so that's just, that's a concern. Again, I think Tristan Alvano is going to have a bright future at Nebraska. I think he is the future of the kicking game. They got to do whatever they can do though to win these next 6 games.
Yeah. And, but I am encouraged by, to me, the special teams, other than, you know, Alvano, again, true freshman kicker. And he's 3 for 7, by the way, T. And then he said he's 1 for 4 and 2 against
Illinois. I'm sorry. He was 1 for 4 going into Illinois.
Yeah. But I just want sufficient special teams. Don't have the special teams be the reason that you lost, right? Encouraging things there. Like, we've been, knock on wood, we've been good at catching punts. We had like a crazy blocked punt against Illinois that I think actually hit, was it Gunnarsson, I think, or who blocked that? I can't remember who blocked it, but it like hit him in the leg because we had a good rush on, but it counts as a blocked punt. Like, we didn't end up turning it into points because the offense tripped over their own, what have you. But, I just want the special teams to be just good enough. I don't think we're in a spot right now where, like we talked about Iowa, that Cooper DeJean or Cooper DeJean kid from for Iowa had a pick and a punt return for a touchdown. Like, I don't know if we're at a spot where we're going to get punt return touchdowns or kick return touchdowns. Just don't fumble the ball. Be sufficient in the special teams game. Don't let it be the reason we lost. And I know you might say, well, it might come down to we need a field goal to win the game. Is that having the special teams be the reason lost? I don't know when you're putting a true freshman out there, but just be sufficient.
Well, and I know the answer is yes, but do you remember DeMornay Pearsonell?
Oh my God.
Do you remember how spoiled we were? That 2014, that 2014 game at Iowa, I'm trying to remember. He had at least one return for a touchdown and one other long one, or was it 2 returns for a touchdown? I think he returned one
all the way and then one down to like inside like the 15 yard line or something.
He basically won that game for us.
Yeah.
And the guy was such an electric playmaker. So yeah, we don't have to go down that rabbit hole, but I think you're spot on, Matt. Like, just be sufficient and don't take us out of the game or don't hurt our chances to win the game. Right.
Right.
Okay, common fans, we have covered a ton of ground here. This pod has been a lot of fun.
This might be a two-parter, TJ.
It might be. We'll see how we end up splicing it. We'll see what the board of directors decides to do in the editing room. All right, we're going to wrap this thing up by looking ahead to the final 6 games on the schedule. I don't know if this makes any sense. Are you guys Sopranos fans?
I just Googled a scene. You remember the intervention scene?
Oh, that scene is
all-time best.
Peak Sopranos.
So,
it's so funny.
To give you listeners a little bit of background here, we talked about in the previous podcast about how Husker football can be an addiction, especially to people that have lived through the really, really good times. And it got me thinking that sometimes Husker football fans need to have an intervention. Maybe they're just a little bit too over the top and maybe are blinded by the goodness that they once had and need an intervention. And I thought immediately of Christopher Moltisanti during his intervention and that whole thing completely coming off the rails and him physically fighting his family. And I feel like that was a good, perfect example of what it would be like to sit down with a diehard Husker football fan.
That's so true.
To calm down a little bit.
That's so true. That scene is just peak Sopranos because none of them are capable of like, actually being mature and like executing the intervention in the way that they're supposed to. And so a couple of the Paulie and I think at least Paulie, maybe one or two others end up insulting Christopher.
Yep.
They all end up fighting. It's just, it's dark and funny. And it's just like peak Sopranos.
Yep.
So I don't know if this makes any sense. I was going to reference a different episode, but I think it was at the final season or one of the final seasons. Bobby Bacala convinces this rapper that he, Bobby, should shoot the rapper not to kill him, just to like increase his street cred,
give him some cred,
and increase his record sales. And he convinces the rapper to pay him to shoot this guy. But when he's talking to him, he says, "No, it'd just be the fleshy part of the thigh." Like he's telling him where to shoot him. It would just be the fleshy part of the thigh. And I don't know why, but when I look at the next three games, especially, I just keep thinking of the phrase, the fleshy part of the thigh. I don't really know if that makes sense or not, but the Huskers, it's a bye week, and we're aiming to release this episode kind of Friday, Saturday of the bye week to give fellow Common fans something to focus on, some content to focus on during the bye week. So coming out of the bye week, we're going to have Northwestern at home. We're going to have Purdue at home. Then we're at Michigan State. Then we've got Maryland at home, at Wisconsin, and Iowa at home. So again, I think Maryland, Wisconsin, Iowa gets a little bit trickier. But you look at Northwestern, Purdue, Michigan State, two of those three teams have fired the coaches, their head coaches, right, that they thought they were going to have for the season. Like,
yep.
Mel Tucker at Michigan State was in season. Northwestern was right before the season. Purdue obviously has a first-time head coach. None of them have been very good. And so this is really our chance. Like we were just, I dare not say it out loud again, but like if we could run off three in a row, I mean, Husker Nation will be beside themselves. Really feels like we got to get at least two of these three. Don't you think, guys?
I personally, from the looks of the schedule, and you laid it out there perfectly, TJ, that I think that we win the next three for sure. And I don't usually say that because before in previous seasons, there was no, as they say in the investment world, their past performance is not indicative of future returns. And in this case here, from what I've seen so far this season, I think, especially with the Illinois game, I think that with Northwestern, they're 0-2 on the road right now, as my numbers calculate. So I think we've got a good home game there where we have a good chance. I think we'll be just fine. When it comes to Purdue, another home game, when I was looking at numbers there, I think they're 1-1 for away games. So I think we're looking okay there. And then as far as Michigan State's go, we're going there. It's an away game, but like coaching, like we talked about already, that seems to be a situation for them right now. I've got a good feeling on that one. And then the remaining three games after that, we've got Maryland, Wisco, and Iowa. Maryland's going to probably be a problem. Not going to lie to you there. I'm not going to sugarcoat that at all. Wisconsin, I mean, Luke Fickell, first year, still looking pretty good there. Going to be a tough game. I'm not really too confident in that one. I do think we're going to beat Iowa, personally, just because of Owens, what he's talking about as far as not the best offensive team, but they're just grinding it out. I think that we do have a shot with them. So all in all, I think that we have a good look at least having positive record by the end of the year and dancing in the streets. that's my two cents.
Okay. So I agree. I think if for some reason we win two out of the next three instead of three out of the next three, and let's hope we at least do that. You know, that thing, everything we want to accomplish is still in play, especially with that Iowa game. I mean, you obviously wanted to beat Maryland, you wanted to beat Wisconsin, but I think I agree with you. So here's what I'd like to do though. Let's go through like, and actually I'm going to ask you like each of us to pick what's your hardest game, what's your next hardest game. We're going to rank them hardest to easiest. And then I'm going to force you guys to pick. Geoff, I know you said, you know, some of those games you felt good about, others you didn't feel as good about, but I want you guys to actually pick win or losses for each of them. So what do you think is the hardest game left on the schedule?
For me personally, it's going to be Maryland. That's mine.
Okay. Interesting.
Yep.
I got Wisconsin. I think Wisconsin on the road.
Wisconsin is what I had as well. Tell us your thinking on that, Geoff.
Well, I mean, just from last week, I mean, with Ohio State, I mean, I know things didn't turn out the way they wanted to, but going into that game in the Big Ten, I mean, what's the record now? Like when I was looking, they've had one loss so far.
I think they're 5-1. I think they're 5-1.
Yeah. So, I mean, pretty darn good as far, and I never thought I'd say that from a standpoint of like usually Maryland and like a Rutgers and those type of teams really aren't that big of a threat. But for some reason, just the hype that they got going in the Ohio State game really kind of turned me on to them. So I think that might be a challenge for us.
Well, and I would also say they like to spread it out and throw it up. And if there's an area where we, I think, have been most vulnerable, where the defense has been most vulnerable this year, it's been against the pass. Now they come into town on second weekend in November. So maybe the weather's a factor or something like that. But I think, you know, I think that's a really good point. All right. So I've got us losing to Wisconsin. Owens, what do you have for Wisconsin? And where do you have us for Maryland?
I have us losing against Maryland and I have us losing against Wisconsin. So
okay.
I have the same. I have, I think those are one and two. I got Wisconsin as the hardest of the remaining six and Maryland as the second hardest.
Okay. That's what I had. So I don't know why I was really grilling you on Maryland, Geoff, because I had Maryland as the next hardest game and I have us losing that one as well. So, and Jeff, do you have Wisconsin as your second hardest? Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Okay. So we're all kind of on the same page. Maryland and Wisconsin are probably the two toughest left on the schedule, however you want to rank them. Neither of us. And look, let me say this. What I've seen of those teams, and it hasn't been a ton, but what I've seen of those teams, I think we can play with those teams. I think we can win those games. But I think, you know, where we are as a program, you know, where Husker fans have been, seems like a lot to kind of pick those as well.
Yeah, I think with those two also, the two head coaches of those teams, right? Like, I think and I don't know if he gets enough credit, Mike Locksley at Maryland, who has been a head coach. He's like kind of one of those guys that, like, his head coach didn't work out, went and worked for Nick Saban, and now he's been at Maryland for, I don't know how long he's been there, 2-3 years at least. But he's got some players there, and he's got Tua's brother at quarterback, who seems like he's been there forever. And he's going to be a problem. You know, he's similar to me, not quite as dynamic as Shedeur Sanders, but similar, where he's athletic enough. He can basically, to me, he buys himself time to be able to make the throws. It's not necessarily he's going to scramble out and end up running the ball. It's like, buy myself some time so I can get the ball out. And then in Madison, I mean, we're going to Madison the week before Thanksgiving. It's going to be cold. It's the jump around. We'll know more about Wisconsin by then too. I feel like they've kind of been like, yeah, maybe they're not that great. They lost to Washington State, but Washington State's pretty damn good, guys.
Yeah, that's right.
So, you know, I think Wisconsin, Maryland, those two are going to be the toughest.
All right, so we've all got Wisconsin, Maryland as our toughest two games. Matty O, what do you have as the next most difficult game after that?
I have the regular season finale, Iowa at home.
That's what I've got.
Just strictly because it's Iowa, it's our border rival, it's Kirk Ferentz, it's Brian Ferentz. It's going to be, I feel like it could be an absolute bloodbath. And I feel like it's going to be like one of those 10-7 or 13-10 football games.
Right.
Where fluke touchdown is like the deciding factor.
Yeah. Special teams are going to matter in that one.
Yes, exactly. I absolutely believe we can win that game. But I think, you know, we as Husker fans need to recognize, as much as not just Husker Nation, but really all of college football loves to make fun of Brian Ferentz and that completely inept offense, and rightly so. You know, we're kind of a similar program right now.
We are, but here's where I come out on that. Like, here's where I stand with Iowa moving forward in the future. If we can be as talented or more talented than Iowa, which I feel like most years, even the last 6-7 years where we've been terrible, we've been as talented or more talented, but they've just outmatched us with physicality. If we can be as talented or more talented and match their physicality, there's no reason we shouldn't beat Iowa every single year. When I watched last year, it was like, okay, we matched their physicality, and then we had one guy who just wanted to rip their throats out, and it was Trey Palmer. If we can get one or two guys in here, and I don't know if they're on the roster right now, if we can get one or two guys like that that are just can take the game over with one or two huge plays, we will beat Iowa every single year.
Well, I think for this year, it is not insignificant that Cade McNamara, their starting quarterback, is out for the year.
Yeah.
So obviously best to him. You never would never celebrate that sort
did
of
you,
thing.
Did you see the guy that came in for him? He's a chonky boy.
Yeah.
He's a thick fella.
He's been eating tombstones with Burt Bielema watching film.
He was like 1 for 9 with like an interception, and like the one completion was like 9 yards. And then he threw like a beautiful touchdown pass to who? Their tight end. It's like Iowa, tight end university. And then it's like, oh yeah, now Iowa's up by 2 touchdowns. Like, you gotta be kidding.
Okay, so Wisconsin, Maryland, Iowa, kind of the toughest 3 games on the schedule. We all agree on that. So let's just do this. Let's just do it like this for those other three: Northwestern, Purdue, Michigan State. Give them to me, all three, hardest to easiest, and tell me if you're calling win or loss for each of them.
All right, I got Michigan State. Michigan State. Sorry, did you want GF to go first?
No, go ahead.
I got Michigan State. So hardest to easiest, Michigan State, just because it's on the road.
Yep.
Okay. Yep. And then Purdue, just because I think they're a little more skilled than Northwestern. So then obviously Northwestern, I think, is the easiest of the 6 games left.
And what's your call? Did we actually go on the record for Iowa?
Oh, I don't know that I did. We're going to be.
Sorry, I don't think we did. I put it as a W.
Yeah.
It's I said always that 50, earlier.
Yep. Okay. It's always 50-50. I always have the butterflies, but I put it down as a W.
Yeah. I got us winning the next 3 and then dropping 2 in a row to Maryland, Wisconsin, and then beating Iowa. So that puts us at 7-5, boys. That's what I got. And then maybe that's Kool-Aid drinking. But I really think the way we're playing D, and if we can just not lose the turnover margin, I think we can really make that happen.
Had we not won the Illinois game, I think that would certainly skew my decisions. But
oh, yeah.
I said the exact same thing too, man. The next 3 games, I think we win. Had we not beat Illinois, I wouldn't be that confident in these. But just that Big Ten road win changed my whole perspective on how this season could possibly go, because we can do it. I know we can. It's there. So I agree with Matt. I said next 3, Michigan State on the road is going to be difficult. I would say Northwestern hopefully would be the easiest, with Purdue kind of falling in the middle there.
Yeah, I had the exact same thing, guys. So we all agreed on all of these, right? Wisconsin, Maryland, we had those. We weren't in exactly the same order, but we all agreed that those are kind of the toughest 2 games. And then Iowa is sort of the next toughest after that, which means, as you said, Geoff, our 3 best chances, and this is not revolutionary here. I don't think this is really a deep analysis, but our next best chances for wins are our next 3 games.
Yeah.
Northwestern absolutely needs to be a win. That's a dumpster fire of a program. Purdue with a new head coach, they're not as good as they were last year at all. And then you just got to go into Michigan State and win that game. They have got a lot of problems. This coaching change is unsettling for the program. So you got to win the next 3. Guys, if we get to 7-5, that bowl game could be after Christmas. I mean, that could be like a December 26th, December 27th bowl game.
We could be playing Notre Dame.
And maybe it doesn't have .com at the end of it, right?
I mean, the bowl game
people have heard of.
The one thing we shared, I think you shared this maybe with us today, TJ, was that graphic that had the bowl game predictions. And I think it was from Big Game Boomer on Twitter, who historically loves to engage Husker fans by pumping us up or taking us down. But had us in the Las Vegas Bowl against Washington State. Like, that would be awesome. I mean, we play against Cam Ward in Washington State.
Was that the one that was December 23rd?
I think so. I would take that, though.
Was that the one I retweeted? That might have been.
I think it was. Well, here's the one that I'm not totally sure.
That's right. Is
Michigan State, right? Here's their schedule coming up before they play us. At Rutgers, they'll probably lose at Rutgers. Rutgers is 4-2. They're decent, right? They hung with Michigan for like a quarter and a half or so.
Well, and Shiano's instilled a physical culture in that program. I mean, those guys, we beat them last year, but that was a rock fight.
Yeah. So Michigan State is at Rutgers. They got Michigan at home. And then they go to Minnesota. And then they play us. So they're going to get absolutely the snot rocked out of them 3 weeks in a row. And then they got us coming to town. So that kind of plays into my win prediction there a little bit. Is their schedule the next 3 weeks before we come to town? I think they're going 0-3, and I think they're going to be real beat up. So I think that was my one thing where I'm like, okay, we're probably going to lose to Wisconsin. We're probably going to lose to Maryland. Going on the road at Michigan State, I think they're going to be real beat up. They're going to lose the next three.
And when you have the instability of what they've been through, like.
Right, the mental factor for them.
Hard to keep it together as a program.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess we saw last year after Frost got canned, that team really rallied around Mickey. So anything is possible. But what do? We lost a bunch of close games. So
yeah, we still did.
Well, all right, Common fans. This has been a thoroughly enjoyable sort of midseason review. We were hopeful to get this pod kicked off at the beginning of the season. We just weren't able to do that for a variety of reasons. But we're excited that our second pod ever can be kind of an in-depth middle point of the season review. And then the plan is, on top of other interesting and engaging pods, we'll do a breakdown of every game from here on out for the rest of the season. And then we'll probably host some sort of party when we get to a bowl game, some sort of perhaps remote dancing in the streets type of party or something like that. Please make sure, again, as we said at the beginning of the episode, follow us on Twitter at CommonFanGBR. Send us an email if you want to engage in the discussion, CommonFanGBR@gmail.com. Would also be great if you want to leave a rating or a review on whatever podcast platform you're following on. Subscribe to the pod, follow the pod, all kinds of actions and all kinds of ways you can get involved with the Common Fan Pod here. But we appreciate you listening. We're having a blast doing this. Again, boys, let's end on a positive note. The future is bright with Coach Rule and the boys. We go into a bye week with a nice big W, and everybody can relax this weekend and just enjoy watching college football. Any final thoughts from the fellow Common fans?
I think just maybe pop in a couple of Tombstone pizzas this weekend and enjoy college football and not have to worry about the Huskers giving you anxiety.
The CFIC is real. Trust no one.
All right. With that, Common fans, we'll talk to you again soon. GBR.
Go Big Red.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.